And you want to stay with us for the details here on Newsnight, send me a WhatsApp 0551111997. My name is Evans Mensah.
I am Emefa Apau.
And we start tonight from the Finance Ministry, where the Minister has been sounding bullish about Ghana's economic outlook as he confirms that a total of $360 million IMF third tranche will hit Ghana's account tonight. He's been promising that government will not allow this year's elections to derail its commitment to tightly control expenditure. He has been addressing the media today at a news conference, and he expects the economy to rebound.
Generally, the macroeconomic environment continues to remain stable as government continues to implement the IMF-supported program. Growth, as we've heard from the previous two distinguished speakers, is proving to be more resilient and robust than initially programmed. And the economy continues to show strong signs of recovery. And so if we are beginning to see industry performing well, it tells us that the real recovery is here. After successfully securing a staff-level agreement under the second review of the IMF-supported program in April 2024, the IMF Executive Board approved the second review of Ghana's program last Friday, 28 June 2024. And this has just been confirmed by the IMF Mission Chief, Stefan Rode. We therefore expect the fund to disburse the third tranche of $360 million by close of business today, Monday, 1st July 2024.
Well, MFA, he's also been taking on some NDC members, particularly the minority spokesperson on finance, who he accuses of speculating and rallying Ghanaians to buy dollars. He claims that the problem is largely due to that, and he expects the city to stabilize.
We have said over and over that the problems with the city can also largely be attributed to speculation. And therefore, whilst we've been making effort to influence market sentiments positively, we also know that some other people are inciting speculation. We have had intelligence that people have been deliberately inciting speculation, but we never got it too real, as we saw only 2 or 3 days ago, when my good friend and my brother, the Honorable Adongo, went out there urging people to buy dollars to do their business. And this was after I indicated at the town hall meeting in London that with all the policies we are implementing, with the flows that we are expecting from external sources, and with the completion of our restructuring, the debt restructuring, with our bilateral official creditors, as well as our Eurobond holders, we saw the city becoming stronger and stronger. My brother went out there to say that people should ignore Amin Adam and go out there and buy dollars to do their business. I think that this is not healthy for our economy. We all need to work together, whether we are with the government or we are with the minority, because we are all stakeholders in this economy. We have a duty to our people to ensure that the economy is stronger for the benefit of all. And so, my friends, on the minority side, I want to appeal to you to stop inciting speculation and to work with us. Give us constructive criticism, give us ideas so that we can complement the ideas we are already pursuing, so we can provide the kind of direction our people expect of us.
He didn't address this press conference alone. The governor of the Bank of Ghana, Ernest Addison, is also forecasting a tough half year for Ghana's inflation trend.
To the end of the year, to see through all the structural reforms envisaged under the program, including the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding between the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of Ghana on the recapitalization of the central bank. This will strengthen the central bank's credibility to effectively deliver on its reforms. I must at this point mention that on a year-to-date basis, that is as of June 27th, the Bank of Ghana had accumulated foreign exchange reserves to the tune of $907 million, nearly double what we have in the IMF program targets. The bank will continue to work closely with the commercial banks to ensure that they are well capitalized to deliver on their mandate to support growth. Plans to recapitalize banks are being implemented also to strengthen financial stability. Most of the banks are ahead of their recapitalization plans, and we are confident that the sector will continue to remain sound, liquid, and profitable. Inflation is still high at 23.1% relative to our end of year target of 15 plus or minus 2%, despite the sharp improvement. And the rest of the year will be challenging, but we will remain resolute, working with the Ministry of Finance and the IMF to ensure that the improving outlook is sustained.
Well, let's interrogate a bit of what we've heard already from the finance minister. I want to bring in Professor William Pipra. He is a professor of finance at the Andrews University in Michigan. Joins us right now on Zoom. Prof, thanks for your time here on News Night. Listen to the finance minister. He's sounding bullish. And indeed, if you look at the indicators, he cites, for example, the real GDP growth for quarter one of 4.7%, highest if you compare it to last year, same quarter of 2022. And you look at inflation trending downwards. You share in his confidence?
Good evening, Evans, and good evening to you, to your listeners. If you ask me, I'll be very cautious with this kind of confidence being expressed by the finance minister. We are not yet out of the woods yet. We have to see the impact of repayment of interest and of our loans and principals when they become due. So this is very, very important. Also, we know that there is some point of economic activity demands for foreign currencies. We also have to look at how this will turn around. And also, we are in the election year. This is also going to be a major challenge because we notice that there might be a little bit of spending.
Well, on that tonight, he says that they acknowledge that they are going to raise the needed revenue, but most importantly, they're going to cut expenditure also.
So we have 6 months to go. Which line of items in terms of the expenditure is the government going to cut? Is the government going to stop the infrastructure projects, which may have an impact on their their ability to win the election? So is it going to be on emolument? It is very, very difficult. Unless government is hoping to defer some of the projects that they have already awarded. And in that case, cash flow will not be moved. And they may turn out to be a little bit of savings if the cash flow is not moved. That is the only angle that we may see Ghana being able to control its expenditure.
He talks about the IMF tranche now that is going to be released, $360 million hitting the accounts tonight. He cites that as part of a collective measure to deal with the depreciating cedi. But he also talked about the speculation. How much of a difference do you expect this $360 million to make?
I mean, if you ask me, I was just looking at the demand, foreign currency demand by our OMCs. Monthly, they need roughly close to $350 million in a month. So if we have we are receiving 360 to add to our already, according to the central bank governor, $907 million balance of payment reserve. If Ghana is going, if the central bank is going to fulfill only the demand from OMCs, which is the oil marketing producers, and what we have is not enough. So we have to be very, very careful The impact of this money coming in, we'll see if, in my perspective, a small positive stability in our exchange rates. But what may really work for us is if you're able to get additional inflows coming in from the bank recapitalization agenda. You see, when banks are being recapitalized, foreign investors who have shares are supposed to bring in funds. So that will really, in my perspective, will really be able to support our economy at this moment. That is why the governor and IMF is keen on this kind of agenda of the bank recapitalization. I've just looked at some of the financial statements of some of the banks. They have already turned out to be profitable. If they decide not to pay a dividend in 2020, based on their 2023 financials, most of the banks will be able to meet the bank recapitalization needs. But these are management and boardroom discussion. If the central bank insists that shareholders should bring in additional funds, this will really come in to support our balance of payment. And that is the one that will really ensure that our currency sees stability. The moment banks bring in additional foreign direct investment, it comes to shore up our balance of payment. And that is where we may have some advantages.
Now, there's a lot of positive talk about the economy. Listen to the IMF, listen to the finance minister, even the World Bank. But it's always about how this then reflects in people's lives. How does the government go about achieving that, translating these positive indicators into the felt economy?
So government will be able to do that if government becomes very frugal. You know, we have, I know frugality is a subset of financial discipline, but frugality is more detailed. Where we try to reduce waste, avoid waste and also unnecessary expenditure, and then we encourage savings. If the government is going to really avoid the wasteful expenditures, it may turn out to have an impact on Ghanaians. And what Ghanaians are looking out for is that inflation figures should come down, currencies should become a little bit stable, and they'll be able to price items. The volatility in prices in the country is a major concern for Ghanaians. So listening to the governor, you notice that he mentioned that inflation target is going to be a major challenge in the year, from now up to the end of the year, because they know that prices are really going to fluctuate. And we've seen it with the cement issue and other commodity, other items in the country. And that is where the impact will be felt. Just today, and we know that utility prices have been increased and fuel price has been increased. And once these two items, or these three major, electricity and water and fuel, have been increased, we expect prices in the country to go up. And this is where the government must watch and be able to make sure that that stability we need in pricing is maintained.
Thank you very much. That there is Professor William Pipra. He's a professor of finance, Andrews University in Michigan.
Well, after more than 6 years of negotiations also, Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam also announced that government has now reached an agreement with some independent power producers or government experts that this deal with the IPPs and PPAs will end the scare of plunging the country into unscheduled power outages. Earlier, we heard from the IPPs on this following the announcement first on Friday. They raised concerns about it, but we'll get into it. But the member of Joy News Research Desk, Kofi Ejeh, joins me in studio with more on this particular deal. Kofi, let's start with this legacy debt. How much exactly it is, and how long has this negotiation been going on for?
Well, MFA, we are looking at over $1 billion of legacy debt. In terms of the agreements with the IPPs, they say that this provides some fiscal relief and savings over the life of the PPAs, as well as the guarantee a more reliable supply of power. And if you look at the negotiations, MFA, we have government says they have negotiated deal with AXA, Amendi, Senate, Kappa, there's also SenPower, and then also Eli Power. So we know that there are two outstanding, which is the car partnership and Sonana Sogli.
Mm. And we know that government set up a committee to negotiate some debt restructure when it comes to this situation. But how many exactly do we know the IPPs were part of this deal, and how many eventually caved into government's demands?
Absolutely. Seven IPPs were actually engaged in terms of these negotiations. Five of them have agreed to restructure or take haircuts. Two are still outstanding. Now, if you look at these seven IPPs, they account for 60.4% of Ghana's dependable capacity in terms of energy generation, according to the Ghana Energy Commission. Negotiations are still going on between the two biggest IPP, which is Sonana Sogli and Car Partnership. Now, MFI, if you look at Sonana Sogli and Car Partnership, they account for 27% of the national dependable capacity and 46% of the total IPP's dependable capacity.
Okay. Well, we'll get to hear from the minister shortly on this. I've been referring to that interview we earlier had with Dr. Eli Glim Apetogbo, is the CEO of the Chamber of Independent Power Producers. We'll get to hear him and the concerns he raised earlier. But at the press conference, the minister, Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam, took on the CEO of the Chamber of IPPs, Eli Glim Apetogbo, whom he slammed for delaying the negotiation process.
I have read from the media yesterday the Chamber of IPPs disputing the assertion of our concluded negotiation with the IPPs. And I'm sure that he wasn't well informed at the time the Chamber issued the statement. I want to repeat that we've reached agreement with Amandi, SunPower, Eli Power, Senate, and AXA. We have seven IPPs and we've reached agreement with five of them. That is very positive for our country. It tells us that the threats of shutting down power plants will be a thing of the past, because we are committed to implementing the terms of this agreement. We already have started performing on our side. And to date, government has paid in excess of $400 million to all IPPs as part of our performance of the agreement that we just reached. And therefore, for a chamber representing IPPs not to be informed about these developments and will issue a statement on behalf of the IPPs without consulting with them, it's really unfortunate.
And that there is the finance minister. I want to bring in the ranking member on the Energy Committee in Parliament, John Jinapo, joins us on the line right now. Mr. Jinapo, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. The announcement there we just heard is good news, is it not? It's definitely going to lessen the burden that we've seen as far as the energy sector debt is concerned.
First of all, let me thank you. My checks indicate that, once again, this is nothing but a charade. And it's just an attempt to push the obligation to another government. I've spoken to the IPPs, and I can confidently tell you that there's nothing interesting, there's nothing positive about the claim from the finance minister. First of all, we'll finish with AXA. AXA has exhausted its contract. It's 5 years and over. The major ones, Car Power and Sonana Sogli, you are unable to agree with them. So when you drill down what the minister is saying, it is nothing but a PR gimmick aimed at fulfilling an IMF conditionality.
There are seven IPPs. He says five of them they've reached an agreement with. He gave us an update on Car Power and also Asogli. And he says they're currently still in negotiations and you're hoping that they'll wrap this up before the end of the year. That's definitely positive, isn't it?
So I have your website here. We've reached an agreement with five IPPs on debt restructuring. Finance Minister, 1st July 2024, 242. In that same story, the minister is saying that they are now going for regulatory approval. They are going for ministerial approval, and they are going for government approval. So which government has reached an agreement with the IPPs? And now that same government is going to a minister, is going to government, and going to regulators for approval. It tells you that it's not done yet. And it's just a hasty way of trying to put out information. Look, the minister should put out the details. If they've reached an agreement, what is the haircut? What was the percentage? What is the amount? Did he tell you the amount involved?
He talks about a billion.
Did he tell you the percentage?
He says $1 billion worth.
That
of
is
debt
the
is
debt.
What has been restructured.
That is the debt. So what percentage in terms of haircuts are they given? And what is the quantum of the debt? In any case, he says they are coming to Parliament. He hasn't even gotten ministerial approval. He hasn't gotten cabinet approval. He hasn't gotten regulatory approval. The Chamber of IPPs has come out to deny that they are indeed, they've agreed with government. And like we're saying, look, today, even from the DDC side, they require $450 million every month. Bank of Ghana is able to provide only 10% of that amount. And yet this same minister is telling us that we've turned the corner around and things are improving. You're unable to even pay IPPs. You're unable to pay your external debt. The exchange rate is still depreciating. Cost of living is increasing. Electricity is up. Fuel is up. Water is up. Cement price is up. Meanwhile, salaries and wages are stagnating. And you are looking into the face of Ghanaians and telling us that things are going in the right direction. They should stop this propaganda and rather begin to think of handing over notes.
And very quickly, this IPP's deal he announced today, he says part of it will come to Parliament. Will you support it?
We are waiting for the details. The last time they came with a deal, it turned out that they wanted to smuggle $1.2 billion. You recall the Ameri scandal. And any time this government tells you that they've renegotiated something downwards, by the time you read the details, the cost is so high. So far, what I know is that one of the IPPs, they have doubled the tenor. And once you double the tenor, that is the duration of the contract, you are providing the person with security of payment. So naturally, the cost will come down. That is not a saving. That is not what you call saving. But let's wait for those details. To put that information, when he himself knows that he hasn't even concluded with the IPPs. And the chamber, the head of the chamber of IPPs, Eli Kulen himself came out and said that what the finance minister was saying is untrue.
Yeah, Mr. Jinapo, thank you very much. And that there is John Jinapo, is a ranking member on the Energy Committee, as we wait to see the terms and the specifics in the agreement that the finance minister announced today.
Before we go for business, Evans, let's get to Diaponko and two other communities in the Efija Kwabre North District. They are wrestling in a daily battle for access to clean and quality water for the upkeep of their households. In our Thirsty Community series today, Clinton Yebwa visited these communities. Here's his report.
Isolated areas of Efija Kwabre North District is a fraught adventure of setbacks. But none of these challenges is as blunt and plain as the struggle for access to safe drinking water faced by Diaponko and its next door villages. Diaponko, Ejajibiekra, and Ejakunti are clusters of communities in the district where residents trek miles to fetch from their Pemesu pond. Residents make their way to the pond daily to survive. With plastic containers, including the popular Kufuor gallon and calabashes in hand, they dip into the murky waters. They fetch enough, disregarding the noticeable particles in it, and make their way to their homes or quench their thirst on the spot. Ejakakari vividly recounts when their Pemesu pond was clear and reliable water source. There was always a calabash to drink with. Later, they created this path, allowing for mud and dust to get into the pond. Now even animals drink from. The goats, sheep, and dogs we see here quench their thirst from the same water source. Stagnant water can become a breeding ground for harmful microorganisms, but sharing drinking water source with animals is a risk of high diseases transmission. And these deprived residents are very much unaware of such risk. Seidu Iliasu is the unit committee treasurer. Our issues are many. Imagine all the bacteria from animals and having to share a drink space with them. The crisis gets more fascinating. The farming village with two traditional boreholes is not better off. The borehole offer little relief as residents recount how one is often dry and dispensing water tainted with oily substances. The first one they drilled spoils frequently, so they drilled a new one, which turns oily in few days. Meanwhile, the other faintly functioning borehole frequently breaks down due to overdependence from the growing population of the villages. This compels a section of residents to go back to depending on the pond as their only water source. One of the pipes is spoiled, and we don't even have money to repair. The multifaceted canker has a share for school-going children, as they are made to wake up early to join long queues to be able to fetch from the faintly working borehole. Jalilu, a student of GHS1, describes the ordeal of fetching water every morning. It gets to a time all the tools can spoil, and we will have to struggle to get water. The plight of these rural enclaves are seemingly not noticed by authorities. Swali Nanadudu is aggrieved by the neglect of Driaponko and its adjoining communities as he speaks about their efforts and the support they receive from the government. We are a lively people. Trade and food are bountiful here, but it appears we are not part of the country.
Reporting for Joy News, my name is Clinton Yeboah.
And you're still live here on News Night. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. And George Afe is here with business. Hello, George.
Hi, Evans. And coming up, government points to later GDP data, signs of things turning around, but promises to stick to IMF program condition to help families stabilize the economy. And also be hearing from Yalate, who is saying that Ghana's creditworthiness could be reviewed in coming months following deal struck with the bilateral creditors. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, Synthes Tanks and Pepsodent, Hebal and Chaco.
Hey, so as for you, every day you are just pressing your phone. Why? Are they paying you?
They are, Omar.
Eh?
The more I use my MTN, the more points I get. And I can use those points to get airtime, data, and even discounts at shops and restaurants.
Hey, so that is why all of you are always pressing your phones. And you won't tell us, so that way too we can enjoy some.
Oh, Omar.
There's always more to enjoy with MTN Rewards. Just keep talking, testing, and browsing all day, every day to collect your points and use it to redeem amazing offers and discounted freebies right away. There's so much available for you. So dial *550# and get your reward today. Let's go everywhere you go.
Kweku, Kweku, have you heard what they are doing on MTN?
Son, we are so proud of you for setting up this hospital. I really love those hospital beds and waiting chairs. By the way, did you import them?
No, Dad, I didn't. I actually got them from Kindle Books and Stationery right here in Ghana.
Wow. We also bought our office supplies, safes, executive desks and chairs from Kingdom, and they gave us expert advice on how to set up our office.
Guys, that makes three of us. I also got our sofa and bedroom sets, plus our dining hall furniture for our new home from Kingdom.
Wow, Mom, that makes four of us. I usually get my stationery items from Kingdom. And my teacher also mentioned that our classroom furniture was provided by Kingdom.
So there you have it. Whenever you're thinking about setting up an office or acquiring furniture for your home, etc., Kingdom Books and Stationery should be your first point of call. With over 40 years' experience in the industry, we stock and supply a wide variety of globally sourced office and home furniture, stationery and equipment. Visit our head office, Osu Akwaje, or our office near the Osu Stadium. We're also in Tema Community 1, opposite Olam SHF, Kumase KNUSD Campus, UCC, Cape Coast, and now at the Marina Mall, Airport City. Or call us 0302-764101, 764209, or 762792. Visit our website, www.kingdomgh.com. You
believe. So boy, yeah. We have a new leader in town, OBRNT. I'm on for, but I want to see the brain. When you say my baby, maybe mama more charcoal for whiter teeth.
More charcoal.
Not only that, maybe mama lemon.
More lemon.
Zinc for fresher breath.
More zinc.
And fluoride for stronger teeth.
Hey. Introducing the new President Charcoal packed with more power with a combination of charcoal and lemon for naturally whiter teeth. Grab yours now. This advert is FDA approved.
Life in Denmark can be quite different for an African legend like Michael Essien. The weather, the food, the silence. But there is always a place he can go.
call home. Home is where your heart is.
Sportybet. Play with champions.
Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Min Adam is pointing to the latest gross domestic product data as signs of things turning around for the economy. But he's however promising to stick to the IMF program conditions to help families stabilize the economy. James Ishen has the rest of the story.
The finance minister in a press conference said it is working to ensure further stability of the Ghana city. He said the ministry will further collaborate with the Bank of Ghana and other key stakeholders to address challenges affecting other sectors of the economy.
The implementation of the policies, measures and interventions which we developed to address the economic challenges facing our dear nation are yielding positive results. Despite a challenging global environment, the strong leadership provided by His Excellency President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo and his government, coupled with support and inputs of the people of Ghana, have undoubtedly contributed to the successes we are seeing today. It is our conviction that in the near term, we will see even greater results.
This is what the finance minister had to say on the IPPs.
I have read from the media yesterday the chamber of IPPs disputing the accession of our concluded negotiation with the IPPs. And I'm sure that he wasn't well informed at the time the chamber issued the statement. I want to repeat that we've reached agreement with Amandi, SunPower, Early Power, Senate, and AXA. We have 7 IPPs and we've reached agreement with 5 of them. That is very positive for our country. It tells us that the threats of shutting down power plants would be a thing of the past.
Bank of Ghana Governor Dr. Ernest Addison said the central bank is also poised to work with government in ensuring a safe financial sector.
Steadfastness and commitment will be needed from now to the end of the year to see through all the structural reforms envisaged under the program.
The International Monetary Fund Mission Chief to Ghana, Stefan Rudé, says he's optimistic Ghana's economy will bounce back soon.
It is set to improve by another 1 percentage point this year, with Ghana posting a primary balance surplus.
James Ishen with that report. Meanwhile, economist Dr. Patrick Osumi, however, holds a different view, insisting that it might not be fair to only use the GDP data to judge the economy's recovery.
The message that's been put out there in terms of the nature of our recovery of the economy is probably overstating it. Yes, the GDP number for this quarter, the first quarter of the year, was way higher than expected, but it's just one quarter. And even if you take a detailed look at the GDP number, you see that there are problems. So there are important sectors that are still seeing contraction, like the energy sector contracted about 7.5%, which doesn't bode well for going forward. There's still lots of work to be done before the economy will reach any path to sustainable recovery.
The IMF is, however, concerned about election-related spending, saying it's a major risk to Ghana's program. How best can we avoid this?
I think they are right to be concerned. And, you know, the early signs are not looking good, even though the finance minister promises that there will be no fiscal slippages. Personally, I don't feel too positive that we'll be able to avoid the slippages. I think it's just going to be a matter of to what extent.
Dr. Patrick Osumi is an economist speaking to Emma Davis on Business Live on Joy News. Now, Ghana's creditworthiness could be reviewed in the coming months to favorable status. Now, that's the view of partner at accounting firm Deloitte Yaolati. Now, Ghana has been pushed into a junk status by these rating agencies due to its rising debt stock and challenges in managing the economy. Mr. Yaolati argued the country has actually addressed most of these concerns.
So the first one was our low revenue base. Mm-hmm. We had significant low revenue base. We had our rising debt levels. We had slowdown in fiscal consolidation. and a widening budget deficit. These were the three or four factors that caused the downgrade. Now you ask yourself the first one, the low revenue base. We've made some attempts to increase our revenue, particularly enforcement of tax laws. Largely, we've made some achievement, we've made some gains, but obviously not sufficient, or it's not gotten to the point where we would have loved it to be. And Doc mentioned about 2.5% that your tax revenue should be growing again. I don't think even our tax efforts compared to our peers, who are 18%, we are about 13-14%. So it means that tax to GDP ratio is still low.
Iolate is a partner at accounting firm Deloitte. Now, workers of Consolidated Bank Ghana are appealing to government to accelerate the conversion of bonds into cash to ensure more liquidity for the bank. According to the workers, this will boost their capital reserve ratio as a position of the bank to support businesses and lending. Chairman of the bank's local workers union, Charles Darko Okai, made the appeal and interview with journalists at the inauguration of GCB Bank, that is GBC Bank Union Workers.
Our first MPR for this year was announced that we've been giving bonds again, and we feel it is something that is going to really hamper our growth. Even though over the years when we started and they gave us the bond, we were able to have some profits until the DDEP that took us down there. So when funds came in and we needed to be refunded, they give us bonds again. But we are praying that our management, knowing them, will do what they have to do for us. And the last MPR that we have, just I think about last 2 weeks or so, we are gradually picking up, and we know we'll pick up. But we think that when we have funds, proper liquidity cash will help us do more. So we plead with the government that if they can look at it again and then do that, we'll be happy.
Charles Darko Okai, chairman of Consolidated Bank Ghana Local Workers Union. Now, Nestle Ghana has rewarded over 32,000 of its loyal customers across the country as part of the Ideal Nyankopa promo. Now, the move, according to the company, is targeted to give back and deepen partnership with customers. Now, speaking to Joy Business, Nestle Ghana's corporate communications and public affairs manager, Deborah Kabla, said the company will continue to explore other areas to support its key stakeholders.
For the past 3 or 4 years, Ideal has done a promotion to reward consumers. As you saw in the presentation, we did the Ideal trip to Dubai and took people and their plus ones to Dubai. We did the Ideal promo, someone won a car. Today we have done the Yonkopa promo, and we have given a lot of prizes, but also cash prizes. And this is very important to Nestle and Ideal, because our consumers are the ones that make the Ideal business. And so when we do a promotion, the promotion is focused on consumers to give back to these same consumers who have accepted brand Ideal for the past 50 years.
Deborah Kwabla is the Corporate Communications and Public Affairs Manager at Nestle Ghana Limited. And that's all for business on Newsnight. Back to you, MFA.
And George, thank you very, very much. And that's there for business. You're still live here on Newsnight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. And let's go to Parliament, shall we? Because a special committee tasked to investigate a leaked audio in which some senior police officers were heard plotting the removal of the IGP, Dr. George Akufo-Dampare, with a former MPP regional chairman, Bugri Nabu, has found that the officers misconducted themselves. The officers, COP Alex George Mensah, who is now retired, Superintendent George Asari, and Superintendent Emmanuel Eric Jibby, according to the committee, committed a major offence under police regulations and must be sanctioned in accordance with police disciplinary procedure. Now, the report, which is currently before the House, is also now the subject of controversy, as the chairman of the committee, Samuel Atachian, refused to sign the report over differences with other members who also signed. More on this raging controversy shortly. But first, a parliamentary correspondent, Kweku Asante, has been following this very closely and joins us on the line with a bit more. And Kweku, first, the committee determined whether the tape was authentic. It found that it is indeed one that is authentic, not doctored. How did it come to this conclusion?
Well, yes, Evans, it appeared to be one of the key terms of reference, is one of the key issues they had to respond to. And that is what fell on other findings that they were eventually able to make. And let me look at this report at a term of reference one, to ascertain the veracity or otherwise of the leaked tape. They really did apply several cases that have been decided by the Supreme Court, Court of Appeal, other places around the world. They also did compare the testimony of the persons who had appeared before them, in particular Chief Bugri Nabu, that of the IGP, and the other persons. Remember, Superintendent JB and COP Alex Mensah had made a big case about what they thought was the doctrine of the tape. They did not deny that they were on the tape, but did contest that part of the tape had either been cut off, part of it had been joined to implicate them. The court, the committee, after going through all this, came to the conclusion that based on the testimonies, and I quote, the committee concluded that the first and second audio recordings were authentic and represented a true rendition of the conversations that were recorded, Evans.
And they also found that indeed there was a plot, a conspiracy to remove the IGP?
Yes. The committee really did find that if you look at the conduct of COP Judge Alex Mensah in particular, and also the way Chief Bugri Nabu also conducted himself together with these other police officers, these persons had come into concert to deviously plan to remove the IGP simply because he was doing his job. And it was not because of any good reason. Of course, the committee did not say that it would have excused a plot hatched to remove an IGP if it was necessarily for a good reason. But they did make the point that it was because these police officers felt like the IGP was not going to further the case of the NPP. The committee really find that reprehensible, and they called these police officials, indicating that from all the evidence that they had conducted and they had just put together, it was clear that these persons did connive to do that. I quote again, the committee concluded that Chief Bugri Nabu, COP Alex Mensah, Superintendent Atari, and Superintendent Jebi indeed conceded to cause the removal of the IGP and have been replaced with a loyalist of the NPP, and acting on that, resolved to meet the president to accomplish this goal.
Let's talk about the allegations that were made against the IGP himself, including extrajudicial killings and improper promotion practices. What did the committee find?
The committee found that no evidence had been advanced, in particular from the evidence that he had gathered from all these persons, the testimony that he had made. Remember, at these public hearings, it was realized that someone had written a letter to the committee claiming that the IGP had supervised extrajudicial killings. Others had also written to the committee indicating that the IGP was unfavorably considering promotion in the police service in terms of looking at certain persons that were closer to him and offering them promotion. The committee said, by the totality of the evidence they had gathered, they just did not find any merit in those allegations and dismissed them.
Kuku, thank you very much. I want to quickly bring in the security analyst. He is the chief executive officer of the Security Warehouse Limited. Dr. Adam Bonar joins us on the line right now. You followed this very closely. You've now seen the report that has been leaked, but also laid before Parliament. What's your quick reaction to the findings they made?
Well, Evan, good evening. Well, my quick reaction, I would say the report represents the entirety of what we saw being televised, you know, during the sittings. And so as far as some of us are concerned, personally, I followed day one to the last day sitting, and I made my own notes, and I did my own report in a way. And so I will tell you that the summary of what I did, not so different from what has been produced as distributed to the 275 members of Parliament. And so for me, I would say that it is good. And the chairman not signing, I've seen that he didn't sign, but he only has a passing vote by their own standing orders. It doesn't invalidate the report. It doesn't do anything to the report at all.
What do you expect to happen now, based on the recommendations that we've seen?
Well, what I expect to happen will be, we are told that there's going to be a debate. I don't know when, whether it's tomorrow. They will discuss it tomorrow in Parliament. And I want to see, especially those who have been indicted, COP Alex Mensah, I am praying that they should be able to bring him back, because he committed these offences whilst in service. And if anyone who understands security and is a security historian will tell you that if you committed a crime whilst in service and you even died, your uniform is usually tried and you are dismissed. And then you are dishonorably dismissed. And so they should bring him back and try him. And for the other two serving officers, I think that they would have to deal with them as serving officers. And for me, I want to see more punitive actions taking place And then hopefully some of the recommendations that say that the tenure of an IGP should be made, you know, should be in a way that cannot easily be removed, be looked at. But even there is a tape that I don't know whether you've seen it, where two other officers who were mentioned in the tape, I don't know how Parliament skipped it, Mami Atiwa and one and a commissioner of police, their name were mentioned in the tape. I've seen it and I've cut that portion. Maybe I don't know whether you are aware of it. Their names were mentioned as two others who were also conniving behind the scenes, and Bukrin Abu asked, and Asari, and I think the rest who were in that meeting said yes, they mentioned those names. So I think that we have to re-look at it again, because if you look at the recent fake news that came out, it means there are some people who are still behind trying to undermine the sovereignty of this country. So I think that let's call these people out and let them know we are aware of them.
And that is Adam Bonar, the security analyst. And we expect that this possibly may be tabled before Parliament tomorrow for consideration.
Now let's do Noka and Joy News Impact Makers Awards. Definitely brings back a lot of memories, and there was joy and excitement at the Noka Basic MA School in the Eastern Region as the 2024 winner of the Joy News Impact Makers Award, Eunice Siedwe Japong, returned to school for the first time after winning the overall recognition. Well, the pupils, traditional authorities and residents, he praises on her for bringing honor to their community. Maxwell Agbagba followed her to school 48 hours after winning the award and will join us in studio shortly, but first Samuel Limbura reports on how it all went down on Saturday.
The Joy News Impact Makers Awards is a pioneering social project in Ghana. It celebrates ordinary individuals making an extraordinary impact in their communities. Joy News hosted the second edition of this prestigious event, which recognizes and supports outstanding individuals. Francis Fifi Comson, General Manager of Joy Brands, emphasized the platform's role in amplifying the awardees' vision and mission.
We at Joy are delighted to continue on shining a light on more Ghanaians who are making marvelous contributions to their communities.
Dr. Daniel McCauley, CEO of the McDan Group of Companies, a sponsor of the awards, highlighted the alignment with his company's values of empowering individuals who seek to make a difference. He believes that collective efforts can create a brighter future for the next generation.
I want to challenge each and every one of you to reflect on the impact you can make.
Well-deserved 10 nominees from various thematic areas across the country were called to the stage to be honored. But the long-awaited moment of the overall impact maker finally arrived.
Gentlemen, the moment of truth is finally here.
Ladies and gentlemen, with a standing ovation, the woman of the moment, Miss Eunice Asiedu Ejepong.
Eunice Asiedu Ejepong, a young teacher, emerged as the overall impact maker. Despite being posted to a non-existent school, she established a fully operational institution in a church building in the Eastern Region, growing from 7 to 125 pupils and 9 teachers within 6 months.
I intend to help the kids impact more, not only the community I am being posted to, but extend it to other communities who need help in their various lives.
Eunice took home the grand prize of 10,000 Ghana cedis. Some of the awardees expressed gratitude to join us in the multimedia group for the platform.
I think this is the first award I am receiving, and I'm super, super excited to join news. I'm so happy.
I want to say kudos to Joy News Impact Awards Committee. Kudos to Multimedia for organizing such an award. I think this is a step in the right direction. It's an impetus for all those doing great things in their various communities.
It makes me realize that when you do things in the secret, making impacts, you may not know who is watching. And one day, which is called the Day of Reckoning, may be a day you may meet your destiny helper. And
the Joy News Impact Makers Awards is sponsored by McDonald Foundation, Gold Key Properties, DBS, First National Bank, and Agromoti. The next edition promises to be bigger, with the CEO of McDan Group announcing a special package.
Next year, we are going to do it bigger, and it's going to be branded Joy News McDan Impact Mega.
And Maxwell Ogbegba has just returned from Noka. Maxwell, let's first talk about the drive to the school.
Okay, so we picked her up this morning from Taifa, where she resides, and then did the 29-kilometer commute from her residence to the Noka community. And guess what? It was a very bumpy road, very, very bumpy. Half of the 29 kilometers filled with potholes. And this is the road she uses every morning to get to work. Spends about 1 hour on the road, gets to work. And then when she's returning also, she spends about 1 hour, you know, to get home.
Well, and you were able to surmount all these challenges with her to the school.
Exactly.
Now, when we got there to the Noka MA Basic School, let's talk about the
meeting. It was all excitement there in that community of just about 800 people. We are told many of them are farmers. And they monitored closely. They tell us that on Saturday they were just watching Joy News and hoping and praying that she was going to win. Many of them are very appreciative of what she's done for the community because some of them who I spoke to tell me that they didn't expect a 26-year-old lady to go out of her way to sacrifice this way, you know, for a community. Because when she was posted there, when she was transferred there, there was no school there. There was no school. She was posted to a non-existent school. They are saying that for some people, the default thing to do is to get transferred to go to another institution somewhere. Mm-hmm. But she stayed, begged a pastor there in the community, used his church, you know, for the school. And we saw the school. It wasn't even partitioned, you know, but the students were having a good time learning and studying. Yeah.
And well, it's been life-changing for her and, of course, the pupils of Noka MA Basic School. And Max will bring us a comprehensive report subsequently on this, and you can hear the children in the background excited about the feat of your teacher.
Indeed, and that story was powerful. Remember when we did that story, way before now, the story we actually told it here on Newsnight, posted to a community with no school, turned a misfortune into an opportunity. It's amazing. You know the thing that struck me?
No.
Now she has 9 trained teachers who are willing now to work in that community and work in under her. That's inspirational. A place that nobody wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
She went, you only turn it around, but now teachers want to go there.
And she has over 100 pupils. I interacted with her yesterday on the probe. Very exciting. And she's looking forward to philanthropists now coming together to put up a proper school for these children, over 100 of them. The communities are doing their bit, but at least they need the support now to be able to build a proper school for these children and to help them to become the best at whatever it is that they want to become subsequently in life. I think it's a good time on this inspirational note to end tonight's edition of Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM. We've also been live on Love 99.5 FM in Kumasi. But don't forget, our latest hotline documentary, NCDs, is airing or premiering tonight on the Joy News channel, also on all our social media platforms. You can't miss it. It's a documentary put together, The Silent Epidemic, put together by Emmanuel Jivenu and Seyram Abla D'Souza. We'll leave you with excerpts of that right here on Joy 99.7 FM.
It goes to some time. I even regretted she was my mother because I was like, if she's not my mother, I wouldn't have gotten